If you are a dreamer, come in. If you are a dreamer, a wisher, a liar, a hoper, a prayer, a magic bean buyer. If you're a pretender, come sit by my fire. For we've all had some golden spit tales to spin. Please come in. Come in. I'd like to welcome all of you this morning. My name is Dale Beulah, and I'm a storyteller, and I love stories. In fact, I love stories almost more than anything. Some of you probably like stories, too. Do any of you really like stories? Let me see. Boy, I'm glad I came here. Put your hands down. That is wonderful. Now, the first story I'm going to tell you before you leave, I have to have some help. Could you help me tell a story, do you think? I'm going to tell you what your part is. You have a special part in the story. Now, it kind of sounds like this. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Have you ever heard something like that before? Yeah, I bet you have. Why do people say that to other people? Why do you? Yeah, or come chase me. Or sometimes they try to make you mad. Well, this story has a part that kind of sounds like that, but it's really a song, and I'm going to sing it for you. It goes like this. Na 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 na. Can you do that? Na 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 na. Yes. Now we're going to raise it up a little bit. Na 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 na. Try that. Na 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 na. Now you're getting it really good. Now when you finish that part, you clap your hands three times like this. One, two, three. Let's try it. Na 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 na. That's your part. Can you remember your part? All right. Before I tell you, I have to have a little drink of something special. You probably don't know what this is. Oh, it's delicious. No, it's story juice. I love story juice. When you drink story juice, it makes you want to tell stories. Well, this story that I'm going to tell you today comes from the other side of the world, from a place called Thailand. It's a jungle country. In Thailand, a long time ago, there lived a hunter. He was a powerful hunter, but he wanted to be the best. Now, if you want to be the best at something, you have to do something nobody else can do. And the hunter decided he would go out into the jungle, find a creature, find an animal, find something no one had ever seen before, and if he could bring it back, everybody would know he was the best. So that's what he decided to do. He took his bow and his arrows, and he headed out into the deepest, darkest part of the jungle. And when he got there, that's when he heard a sound coming from way up in a tree, and it sounded like, na, 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 na. Who's making fun of me? He said. He looked up in the tree, and there looking back at him was a beautiful golden bird. The bird looked right at him and said, na, 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 na. How dare you insult me like that, he said. I'm a powerful hunter. I'm going to teach you a lesson. He took an arrow, put it into his bow, and he pulled the arrow back and let that arrow fly, and that arrow went straight toward that bird. But the bird hopped aside. Na, 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 na. How dare you make fun of me? I'm a powerful hunter. I'm still going to teach you a lesson. He took another arrow, put it into his bow, but this time he went back behind the tree where the bird couldn't see him. And he pulled the arrow back and let that arrow fly. And this time the bird never saw it coming. The arrow went deep into the body of that bird, and the bird began to fall down out of the tree. The hunter had a sack on his belt. It was his hunting sack. He opened it up, and when the bird fell, he caught the bird in the sack, threw it over his shoulder. That's going to hush him up, he said. And he headed back to his house. But before he got back to the house, he heard a sound coming from out of the sack. It sounded like, na, 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 na. This is impossible! He opened up the sack. He reached in and grabbed the bird, took the bird in his house, and slammed him on the kitchen table. I'm going to hush you up yet, he said. And feather by feather, he plucked. Pluck, 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 pluck. Help me. Pluck, 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 pluck. He plucked every single feather out of that bird. That's going to hush him up, he said. But when they walked away from the table, he heard burr, 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 burr. Burr, 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 burr. I can't believe it. How could you do that? Wait a minute. I have an idea. He reached into his boot and pulled out his hunting knife. And he chopped. Chop, 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 chop. Chop, 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 chop. He chopped that bird into 100 bird pieces. Yes! He scraped all of those pieces into a pan. He filled the pan with water, put the pan on the stove, turned the fire up on high. That's going to hush him up, he said. But when he walked away from the stove, he heard I can't believe it. This is impossible. How could you do it? I've got an idea. He picked up that pan of boiling bird pieces, yes. He took it outside and put it on the ground, and he grabbed a big shovel, and he dug a deep hole. And when the hole was nice and deep, he picked up that pan of boiling bird and dumped him in the hole. And then he covered it up, and he stomped on it. That's going to hush him up, he said. But when he walked away from the hole, he heard... I can't believe this is happening. This is impossible. How could you do it? Wait a minute. I've got another idea. He picked up the shovel, went back to the hole, and he dug until he got all the way back down to those dirty bird pieces. He picked him up out of the hole, and he put him in a wooden box. He put the lid on nice and tight. He tied a leather strap around the box. He picked up a great big rock, put the rock on top of the box, and tied the rock on tight. Then he picked up the box with the rock on top, walked all the way down to the river, and he threw the box in the river. That's going to hush him up, he said. And as he walked away from the river, he didn't hear anything. Well, the rock was heavy, wasn't it? It weighted the box down to the bottom of the river. But some of you have studied rivers, and you know how they move all the time? The river started pushing the box along the bottom, and the leather strap, it got soaked up with water. And when leather gets soaked with water, it gets looser and looser and looser until finally the rock fell off the box. Now, you know what's going to happen to a wooden box. The box floated up to the top of the river, floated down the river, heading out to the sea. But the river went right by an elementary school. There were children playing out in the playground. And one of the kids looked out in the river and saw the box floating. He said to his friend, "Do you see something in the river?" His friend said, "I don't know." Have y'all seen kids like this? Yes. His friend said, "Well, don't you think we ought to go get it?"
"I don't know."
"Well, I'm going to go get it." He went over to the river. He grabbed the box. He brought it up onto the river bank. He tried to lift the lid of the box, but it was stuck. He had to pull harder until finally the lid moved in his hand. And when he went to lift the lid to look inside, 100 tiny golden birds flew up into the sky singing, "Na na 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 na." And they disappeared. Now, some people think that's the end of the story. It's not. 1 year later, the same hunter was in the same part of the jungle when he heard a sound. He knew he had heard it before. It sounded like, "Na, na, 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 na. Na, 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 na." Not again! He turned around and looked up in the tree, but this time he didn't see a golden bird. He saw 100 golden birds. They were all looking at him, saying, Wait a minute, he said. Wait a minute. Now I know who you are. You're not an ordinary bird. You must be the freedom bird. No one should kill freedom. We should let it be. We should let it grow.
We should let it have fun.
And that's the story of the freedom bird. Thank you for helping me tell the story. Give yourselves a hand. You're good story helpers. Thank you. Could you see the bird in your imagination? Yeah, if you saw it, you could. Well, that's part of your imagination. Take good care of your imagination. Have fun in your class. Goodbye. Goodbye. The story that I just shared with the youngsters, were any of you in a position to watch their faces? Did any of you notice the little tiny one that was standing up right in front of me, just absolutely not moving? I mean, I don't know how old that child was, but you couldn't have been much more than, what? Maybe two? Maybe two and a half? Okay. Not a word, not a peep. Now, did you notice when we first started, they were rustling and kind of pulling on each other and whispering, and then it got real quiet. Then their imagination started taking over, and they started seeing pictures. And when they were looking at me, they were not just seeing me, they were seeing that bird. If they were to go back home today and draw a picture, every one of their pictures would be different. Because each of their imaginations are unique. They're special. They're one of a kind. It's part of the core of the creativity that we all have. Everyone would have a different picture, but every picture would be correct. Now, how often does this happen in school? Every child has a different answer, but they're all correct. The governor would go berserk with this. I mean, where's the accountability here? Where's the accountability? How could you all have different answers and all be correct? That must be something wrong. Imagination is one of those wonderful creative things. We want to share some stories with you today. We want you to join in and use your imagination and talk about ways that you can encourage this wonderful process, because you see, we have a whole generation of children that have sort of lost their imagination. They're what we call television kids. I call them vidiots. It's not their fault. Statistics say by the time a child is 5 years of age, average children have seen 5,000 hours of television. That's just an average by the age of five when they start school. So, when they're watching a television screen, they're not making images. Have any of you ever read a book to a child? Did you ever read a book with pictures in it? Oh, yes. Did you ever read the book and then turn and show them the pictures? Uh-huh. Did you ever read a book that they've heard before or have not heard before, and maybe you weren't reading fast enough, and they say, show me the picture. Show me the picture. Have you ever had this happen? Show me the picture. They can't see it because you're holding it. Show me the... They're not making pictures. So many times I encourage parents, teachers, if it's a story that you already know, just tell it. If it's not right, who cares? Nobody cares. Tell the story. And by telling that story, they are forced to create these images. See, back in the olden days, when I was young, some children, they say it was in the Stone Age. They say, did you have electricity when you were little? I said, yes, we did. I said, but we only had one bathroom. One bathroom? They can't believe it. I said, but it was outside. How could it be outside? You see, it's a whole different connection. When you've grown up with video games and you play with your thumbs, you're not used to making images and pictures. So stories are a wonderful way. The neat thing about stories, of course, is they're free. That's why nobody does them. You can't make a royalty much on folk tales. And, of course, there's no representative from the Grimm's brothers out there hawking their materials to get the school districts to buy the stuff. So stories and things that are free, we don't usually put value on those. But I want to encourage you today that stories have value and that they're fun. We're going to take a few minutes now to center If some of you would like to light a candle, please feel free to do that. And then we're going to come back and talk with you some more about stories.
What is the imagination?
We've talked about the core of creativity. But it's that ability to create images. Some people call it visualization. Some people call it different things. Some people say it's your mind's eye, the same type of thing. Imagination can take you anywhere. You can travel the world using your imagination. And the imagination allows your creativity to bubble up in your own stories. Stories have been with us for centuries. The earliest stories that we know of are really paintings on caves. But there are stories there. Our children today need to rediscover stories, I believe. So what I want to do is share a personal story with you and talk with you about the use of personal stories or family narratives and how they can be used in a fun and playful way. The story that I'd like to share with you happened to me when I was very young. I was about 10 when the story happened. When you're 10 years old, of course, life is not easy. If you have a 10-year-old, they will tell you this. Life is not easy when you're 10, but of course it was a little worse for me because I lived in a big family. There were 5 kids in my family. Anybody here raised in a family that large? Yeah, not many anymore. 5 kids in my family. That means it's crowded. We had to take turns getting ready for school in the morning. We had to take turns using the bathroom. My sister loved to get in the bathroom ahead of everybody. She'd slam the door and lock it, would not let us in. Sisters will do this. I would beat on the door to make her hurry up. She'd just go slower. It made me mad. But that wasn't my biggest problem. I was the oldest. When you are the oldest kid in the family, everything happens to you. You get blamed for stuff you didn't even do. And parents will say things like, at your age, you should know better, you're the oldest. That's what they tell you when you're the oldest. Your little brothers and sisters, they get away with murder. They never get in trouble if they do what you do. Poor little thing, they didn't know any better, my foot. And sometimes you have to babysit those kids. They won't mind you. And then when your parents come back home, the little ones, they'll tell lies on you. Yeah, they say, Mama, Mommy, he beat us up. I never beat those kids. They just told that to get me in trouble. That's what happens when you're the oldest. Is anybody in this room the oldest in your family? Am I telling the truth? Oh, thank you for your testimonies. I can see them out there. Yes, thank you. Well, there was one thing I loved when I was growing up, and that's going on vacation. We didn't go every year. We didn't have enough money, but I knew if we could just go on vacation, we'd have fun. We'd all pile up in my daddy's car. But back when I was little, we didn't have big cars. Minivans had not been invented yet. Station wagons, we never heard of them. Suburbans, huh, you can forget that. We had a 53 Chevrolet. We had to cram all those kids in the car. There wasn't even room for our suitcases. They were up on the roof in a rack. Now, the trunk was full of picnic baskets and ice chests because you cannot feed 5 kids in a restaurant. Otherwise, you're going to be broke. That's what my daddy would say, I'm going to be broke. So we had picnics instead. I love picnics. I still do. So down the road we'd go on vacation. But when you got in my daddy's car, he had rules in his car. Remember the days when daddies had rules in their car? Uh-huh. Rule number one, real simple. Hush up in the back seat. We had to be quiet in the back seat. And that was hard because our car did not have a radio. I've had kids pass out when I said that. No radio. That's right. Back in the old days, only those fancy cars, you know, had the radios. We didn't have a Bel Air. We had a 210. There's no radio in that car. Now, we had neighbors that had more money. They had radio. And, of course, when they hit a bump, the radio would go off. You have to beat on the dash to get the radio to come back on. But we didn't have a radio, so I brought books to read. I knew if I had books, I wouldn't bother anybody. If I had books, I wouldn't get in trouble. My sister had puzzle books. She loved puzzles. She had dot-to-dot puzzles. You've probably seen those. She had fill-in-the-blank puzzles, but her favorite puzzles were called maze puzzles. Oh, she loved them. It said, put your pencil here. And you put your pencil right where it says, you see. Then you trace around to find your way out of the maze without crossing the line. But in the car sometimes, you hit a bump. Gotta go back and erase that one. Start over again. My brother was in the car with us, of course, but my brother, he was a pain in the back seat. He didn't bring nothing with him. I should have been suspicious of him, but I was excited about going on vacation and all. So down the road we go. But my daddy had another rule in the car. Rule number two, don't you fight over those seats. We could not fight over seats in my daddy's car. We had our own seat. We had to sit there every time, and nobody could fight over seats. Some of you have fought over seats before. I can tell by looking at some of you. All of a sudden, you're looking a little guilty. Some of you probably put tape on the seat, didn't you? Stay on your side. I know how that works. Some people drew those imaginary lines. Uh-huh. I'm getting close to home now. I can feel it. And then some of you might have been what we call the whiners. Now, the whiners, they say things like, Mama, she's looking at me. She's looking out my window. Not in my daddy's car. We had our own seat. We sat there every time, and nobody fought over seats. My seat was in the back. Here's the door right here. Here's me every time. That's my spot. Nobody fought over my seat. My sister sat next to me. She had short legs. She sat on the hump. My brother sat by the other door. The two little ones were in the front seat with Mom and Dad. But my brother, he was a pain in the back seat. He's only born for one reason. To drive me crazy. He loves to drive me crazy. But what can you do when you're the oldest? You got to put up with it. Am I telling the truth? Thank you for your testimony. Down the road we go. I'm quiet. I'm reading my books. I'm not bothering anybody. My sister, she's quiet. She's working on her puzzles. But in a little while, my brother slipped his hand in his pocket. He pulled out a sharp alligator clip. Some of you may have never seen. They're like little baby clothespins, but they're made out of stainless steel. They have sharp little needle teeth in them. They bite down on wires. He had a pocket full of them. He took one out, squeezed it open, reached it behind my sister's back. He reached it all the way over where I was sitting. I was just reading my books, minding my own. He got me in the leg. Oh, it hurt. It hurt. My daddy pulled the car off the road. He stopped that car. He turned on, looked in the backseat of us kids. He had the look in his eye like parents do sometimes, like, I know who did it. Some of you may have looked this way in your time. He looked at the backseat of us kids. We didn't say a word. He said, if that happens again, it's going to be the last time it happens. I didn't say a word. I just rubbing my leg. My brother just sat there. I didn't do nothing. That's what he always said. My daddy pulled the car back on the road. We're back on vacation. My leg stopped hurting. I was back reading my books. My sister's working on her puzzles. And then in a little while, my brother slipped his hand back in his pocket. This time he pulled out a long alligator clip, had a real strong spring on it. He reached it behind my sister's back. He reached it all the way. He got me again in the same spot. Oh, it hurt. My My leg was black and blue by then. My daddy hit the brakes. That car went into a four-wheel slide. Now remember, back in those days, cars didn't have seat belts either. We had to peel ourselves off the back of the front seat. My daddy stopped that car. And that's when something happened. This may have happened to some of you before. My daddy did not say a word.
Don't you just hate that? If he doesn't say a word, somebody's in big trouble now.
He just opened that car door. He got out of the car, walked around beside the car by the back door where my brother was sitting. He jerked open the back door. My daddy reached in the back seat, grabbed my brother by his jacket, took him out of the seat, stared him straight in the eyeballs. Then he put him in the back seat and slammed the door. And my daddy got back in the car. He turned around, looked at my brother, pointed his finger in his nose like that. Said, if you make a peep for the next 30 minutes, it's going to be your last peep. My brother just sat there. But I sat there. He finally got the right one. After all those years, it was wonderful. It's the first time I ever had justice in my family. My daddy pulled the car back on the road. We're back on vacation. Well, my leg finally stopped hurting. I was back reading my books. My sister working on her puzzles. My brother just sat there. Till finally he asked my mother, he said,
Bob, is 30 minutes up yet?
My mother looked at her watch. She says, yes, it's been about 30 minutes. But please don't disturb your father while he's driving this car. He has to concentrate.
My brother said, Daddy. Daddy, excuse me, Daddy. Daddy, you know when you stopped the car back there. And you took me out of the car.
And you looked at me.
My shoes fell off.
Guess who stopped the car again? This time he was hot. You could see steam come out of his ears. He was so hot. He stopped the car. He turned around and looked at my brother. He said, why in the world didn't you tell me?
You told me not to say nothing.
That was a rare moment. Parents don't get trapped very often. My daddy was trapped. He couldn't do anything to my brother. My brother did what he told him to do. He didn't say a word. Now he had to turn the car around. 30 miles back looking for those shoes. You see, when I was little, shoes were expensive. Kids nowadays have half a dozen pair. We had three pair. One pair for church. One pair for school. And the other pair, of course, it used to be one of the other pair. That's all we had. My brother would have been barefoot the whole vacation, cut up feet, doctor bills. You know we couldn't afford that. 30 miles back looking for those shoes. Luckily, we found them. Of course, they were knocked off to the side of the road by then. Had tire tracks on them. My daddy stopped the car, got out and picked up the shoes and threw them in the back seat. We went right back on vacation. But from that day on, whenever we got in the car to go somewhere, my daddy never told us to hush up again. He never told us to be quiet. He never even told us to behave. All my father ever said to us, you better remember your shoes. You better remember those shoes. Boy, we all knew what that meant. And now you know what it means too. Thank you for listening to that story. I want to talk to you about that for just a minute. Were you making those pictures? Could you just see us in the back seat of that car? Could you see my poor father trying to deal with whatever he had to deal with? Family stories I would be willing to bet right this minute there is someone in this audience this morning who, upon hearing that story, you remembered a story. You remembered an incident. You remembered a vacation. You may have remembered a lost shoe. Anybody in that category have a memory? Look at this. This is a perfect example. Stories, family stories, are human stories. You raised your hand. Could you just tell me what came to your mind when you heard that story? What did it remind you of right here? Oh, your mother was driving. Oh, my. And of course, you had air conditioning, I'm sure. And you came close to death on the way?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my word. Oh, wow. It was just almost petrifying as you were. Yeah. Now, have you shared this story with your children?
No.
Now, this is what I'm talking about. Your children have no idea what it's like to drive without air conditioning. I'll bet you. This is an example of a family story. It's not a long story. It's a little short story. But let me tell you what these stories do. They are powerful in families. Stories are incredibly powerful to children. Because you see, you've had things happen to you that will never happen to them. But you have also had many things happen to you that will happen to them. These stories, when you share them with children, build resilience. When you tell a story of something that happened to you, especially if it was something sad or something upsetting or something frustrating, you build resilience in young people. Why? Because they know you survived it. You don't have to tell them you survived. You're standing right in front of them. You're sitting right beside them. They can already tell you made it. Have you ever heard a child say something like, "Oh, I thought I was going to die. It was so humiliating. I thought I was going to die." They actually feel those feelings like they might just die because they're so embarrassed. But if their mother or father has told them about when they were little, the embarrassing things that happened to them, then somehow that takes the edge off the death complex. It gives them a different perspective. Remember, stories are free. That's why we don't usually do them very much. I would challenge everyone here, if you have youngsters in your family, and by the way, you must start when they are little. Because if you tell your children your stories when they're young, they'll tell you theirs when they're older. But you can't start when they're teenagers. You got to start early. They have to know that you made mistakes too. Mistakes are a part of living, and stories are a great way to share our mistakes. I'll prove it to you right now. There's someone in this room right now, I don't know who you are, but somebody here, at some time in your life has backed a car out of the garage and taken a piece of the garage with you. Would anybody raise their hand and say that? Look at these hands. Wonderful, wonderful. Now, the follow-up question is this. How many of you did it the second time? Any slow learners here? Okay. Tell your child this story. Tell your grandchild this story. Tell your niece or your nephew this story. Why? Because someday they will drive. Someday they will make a mistake. You can't avoid it. You try to protect as much as you can, but you cannot. But if you have told them your stories. Anybody ever run out of gasoline? At $3 a gallon, almost, some places. It's rough to run out of gasoline. You've got to have lots of money with you. Tell your child these stories, because they will happen to them. Anybody here, the parents of, oh, how can I say this kindly? Teenagers. Please, mothers, tell your daughters of the idiots you used to go out with. You can leave out some of the details, but tell them. How he drank too much and you were scared and you called your dad and your dad came and got you. Why? Because it may happen to them someday. If they have never heard these stories, they might be afraid. Because see, children think parents don't make mistakes. Just like their teachers. Children don't think teachers make mistakes either. I taught school for 20 years. I know this. They think teachers are teachers. They're not human beings. Many children look at their parents similarly. You have control over their entire life. How could you make a mistake? But if you share these mistakes, if you show your vulnerability, then when the things happen to them, that will build resilience. I know that some of you men have dated more than one woman at the same time. Please tell your sons about this. Because someday a girl that they're dating will be going out with someone else at the same time and they may be devastated by it. But if you have told them these stories, let them know that sometimes you don't balance your checkbook correctly. Luckily, the legislature hasn't passed a law against that yet. They may have a test to test you on that pretty soon. I don't know. But let them know that you have made these kinds of mistakes. These are family stories. Has anyone here ever been lost and your parents couldn't find you? Or have you ever lost a child and could not find the child? These are family stories. These are personal narratives. I'll share one with you before we finish this section. When I was 5, I didn't know nothing. Well, I did know one thing. I loved to play in my sandbox. My daddy had built it for me. I could have lived in my sandbox, but my mother wouldn't let me. Mothers are like this. Just when I was having fun, come in the house, you've been out in the sun too long. I don't want you getting sunburned. I didn't want to come in, but I had to. I waited till it got cloudy. Can I go outside now? No, it's going to rain. I don't want mud in the house. But I learned something else when I was 5. If your mother won't let you do what you want to do, ask. Oh, you knew the answer. Someone said it. Ask your daddy. When daddy came home, I told him, Mama won't be playing my sandbox. He said, well, why not? And I told him, he said, well, she's watching out for you. We're going to solve that problem. My daddy was a problem solver. He had a trailer he pulled behind his car when he hauled stuff. Parked it in the driveway otherwise. But he said, from now on, I'm not going to park it in the driveway. I'm going to roll it in the backyard. I'm going to roll it right over the top of your sandbox. You can get under this trailer. When the sun shines, you're going to be in the shade. And if it happens to rain, the rain's going to roll right off the trailer. Your sandbox will stay dry. I said, Daddy, that's a great idea. And it would have been a perfect idea, except for neighbor kids. We had horrible neighbors. My mother called them hooligans. Don't you play with those hooligans, she said. But one day when I was playing in my sandbox under the trailer, the hooligans crawled over our fence. Got up on top of the trailer, started jumping up and down in that trailer, bouncing. I looked up, I saw the trailer bouncing. But when you're 5 years old, you don't know nothing. I said, ooh, the trailer's bouncing. The kids went up and down the trailer, tried to slide like a big sliding board. But when they all went up at the top at the same time, that trailer tipped. Came down right on the sandbox, right on top of me. The tongue of the trailer hit the side of my face, scraped across and crushed my nose flat on my face. I screamed bloody murder. My mother came flying out of the house. Mothers know when you're hurt. You can act like you're I'm hurt. They don't believe that. My mother came flying out of the house. I was pinned under the trailer. She picked up the tongue of that trailer, and when she did, the blood started pouring out of my nose. She took off her apron and she put the apron on my face to try to stop the blood. It wouldn't stop. She picked me up. She put me in the back seat of our car and my mother drove me to the hospital. Because when I was 5, we did not have 911. You can forget that. She drove as fast as she could. She was blowing the horn. She was blinking the red lights. She was crying. She said, oh, Jesus, save us. She thought I was going to be dead. We even ran through red lights. Almost got killed on the way to the hospital. Now, when you get to the hospital, there's a big sign out front. It says, emergency room. Some of you may have seen this sign before. We pulled up by the sign, stopped the car. A bed came out of the hospital. They picked me up, put me on that bed, and took me up to surgery. But before they put me in surgery, they taped my arms to that bed so I couldn't move. Because you know I'm screaming. You know I'm hurting bad. Then they put a needle in my arm. Sodium pentothal. Some of you have had it, I can tell. They always say, relax. That's what they always tell you. Count backwards from 10. And you try, don't you? 10. No. You usually don't get to 9 with sodium pentothal. I was out cold. I didn't know what was happening. They were pushing steel pins up inside of what used to be my nose. They straightened the nose and the cartilage, and then they packed my nose to hold its shape while it healed. But when I woke up from surgery, I could not open my eyes. My whole face was black and blue. It was all swelled shut. I was in the hospital for 3 days before the swelling went down, before I could go home. But I survived. Why would you tell a story like that? Told it for two reasons. First of all, every bit of it happened to me. The ones in front, you may be able to see the scar I still have on my nose. I'll have the scar for the rest of my life. That's what you call a scarry story. I told it for another reason. Because somebody in this room has a scar. And if you have it, you'll never forget how you got it. Am I telling the truth? Tell your children your scar stories. Because they will get one or more. Many. Some of them will get many. Tell them your scar stories because they'll know by looking you survived. And if they already have scars, this is a great way to get a child to start writing. Tell me about your scar story. Tell me what happened to you. They can interview you because you might have been around and helped them with some of the details. Like, what was the name of that doctor? Fathers usually remember how much it costs to get them fixed up. So they can interview you if you were around when the scar happened when you were there. So these personal stories build resilience in youngsters. They pull families together. You see, a long time ago, families lived nearby. You could always go over to Grandma's house. She would tell you stories about your daddy. She loved to tell them. But nowadays, grandmas live all over the country. They live in Florida or in Arizona. We don't have families close by like we used to. So we have to make a little extra effort because this builds not only resilience, but it builds connections. It lets children know, well, my mom made mistakes. Then if I make a mistake, it must be genetic. It's not quite so bad then, you know? It just doesn't feel quite so bad when you goof up. Share these stories with your youngsters.